The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter, and I want to apologize for my hoarse voice. I hope you can tolerate it okay. So we're reading from the Harvard Heart Letter. This is the December 2023 issue. And the first thing I'm going to read is going to be the question for the editor. The editor is Dr. Christopher Cannon. And the question that Dr. Cannon addresses is, can I improve my ejection fraction? I'm a 69-year-old man. 7 years ago, I had a heart attack and received a stent. After some recent chest discomfort, I underwent a nuclear stress test, which fortunately showed no evidence of blockages. However, the report said my ejection fraction was 49%. Which I understand is just below what's considered normal. Is there anything I can do to increase my ejection fraction? Ejection fraction is the fraction expressed as a percentage of the blood that your heart ejects out to the rest of your body each time it contracts. A healthy heart pumps out about half to two-thirds of the blood from its lower left chamber, the left ventricle. So a normal ejection fraction ranges from 50 to 70%. An ejection fraction below 40% means the heart is struggling to provide sufficient blood to the body, which is known as heart failure. Values between 40 and 50% are considered borderline low and may be a sign of future heart failure risk. Because your ejection fraction falls just below what's considered normal, it might be a sign of a mild problem. But a nuclear stress test has limited views, and there can be some variability in the result. Another option is to consider an echocardiogram, which is the standard test used to measure ejection fraction. If the echo confirms that your ejection fraction is slightly lower than normal, your doctor will want to investigate the cause. The findings from your nuclear stress test rule out a blood flow problem, but there are several other possibilities. Causes of low ejection fraction include cardiomyopathy, a disease of the heart muscle with varied causes, like a viral infection or a genetic disorder. Chronic high blood pressure can also decrease ejection fraction. So can the strain caused by a leaky or narrowed heart valve, an abnormally fast heart rate for a long period of time, like from uncontrolled atrial fibrillation, can also weaken the heart. If you're diagnosed with early heart failure, the good news is that exercise can help, including both aerobic exercise and strength training. Larger, more efficient muscles in the legs and arms can better extract oxygen from circulating blood, which appears to help compensate for the heart's decreased pumping power. If you're not already exercising regularly, be sure to check with your doctor first. In addition, many medications, including beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, and angiotensin receptor blockers can improve or stabilize the ejection fraction. Increasingly, doctors strive to get all people who have heart failure with reduced ejection fraction on what is known as four pillars of therapy, which consists of drugs in four different classes that help in different ways. Now here's another interesting article from the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2023. It's called The False Promise of Fish Oil Supplements. Despite what the labels say, there's no evidence that these amber capsules will improve your cardiovascular health. They may even harm it. Millions of Americans, including 1 in 5 people over age 60, take fish oil supplements, often assuming the capsules help stave off heart disease. Who can blame them? After all, the product labels say things like promotes heart health and supports healthy cholesterol and blood pressure levels. People will often say, I don't like eating fish, but I know it's good for me, so I'm taking this supplement instead, says Preston Mason, a faculty member in the cardiovascular division at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital, who studies the unique fats found in fish oil, known as omega-3 fatty acids. Here's the catch. Studies dating back more than a half a century find that people who eat fatty fish tend to have lower rates of heart disease. But over the past 2 decades, multiple randomized trials pitting fish oil against placebos show no evidence of heart-related benefits from fish oil supplements. While the supplements do provide omega-3 fatty acids, there are better ways to get these essential fats from your diet. What is up with the misleading messaging? The FDA considers all dietary supplements, including fish oil, to be foods, not drugs. Unlike companies that make aspirin, antacids, and other over-the-counter drugs, supplement manufacturers aren't required to do any rigorous clinical testing or undergo any product oversight. Despite this, they're allowed to include limited health claims on their labels, and heart-related promises are common on fish oil supplements. Among the more than 2,800 different fish oil supplement labels the researchers checked, 2,000 featured one or more heart-related statements. Most of these health claims featured general but vague descriptions of the role of omega-3 fatty acids in the body. Most, 62%, were cardiovascular claims, such as helps support a healthy heart. In addition, the researchers analyzed 255 fish oil products from 16 major manufacturers and found a wide variability in the actual amounts of EPA and DHA, the two main omega-3 fatty acids in the supplements. These findings confirmed Mason's research. What's more, many widely used fish oil supplements are produced through an industrial process that leaves the omega-3 fatty acids vulnerable to uncontrolled heat and oxygen. This results in the oxidation of these highly unsaturated fatty acids with a consequent loss of any biologic benefit. Adding that multiple laboratory tests on dozens of products have confirmed these findings. Consuming oxidized fish oil has been linked to vascular inflammation, a key cause of cardiovascular disease. If you have heart disease, you might ask your doctor about the prescription drug icosapent ethyl, a high-dose, purified EPA preparation that lowers cardiovascular risk when taken with a statin. The unregulated fish oil supplements found in stores and online are not an effective substitute. If you don't have heart disease, eating 2 servings of fatty fish weekly or following a vegetarian diet rich in healthy oils, nuts, and seeds is a far smarter strategy than buying fish oil supplements. Now here's another interesting article in the Harvard Heart Letter of December 2023, and it's entitled, Living with Heart Disease? Avoid Unnecessary Testing. New guidelines recommend against certain routine tests and procedures for people without symptoms. Medical tests are an important part of managing chronic health problems like cardiovascular disease. Some, like checking blood pressure or cholesterol levels, are fairly simple and are straightforward. But others, especially those that use special equipment to visualize the heart, are time-consuming, stressful, and costly. And in some cases, they are unnecessary. It's not uncommon for people with known chronic coronary disease to undergo such imaging tests on a routine basis, even when they don't have any symptoms to suggest that their condition is progressing or worsening. Now, new guidelines recommend against this practice. People with established coronary disease who don't have symptoms shouldn't be undergoing tests on a periodic basis, says Dr. Dhruv Kazi, who directs the Cardiac Critical Care Unit at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital. The guidelines, published August 29, 2023, in the journal Circulation, say that for those people, there is no benefit for the following three tests. The first is cardiac CT angiography. This uses a CT scanner to take multiple high-speed X-rays to create three-dimensional views of the blood vessels and other heart structures. It requires an injection of special dyes into a vein in the arm or hand that lights up the blood vessels. The next one is echocardiography. This uses ultrasound to show how well the heart vessels and valves are working and to measure the ejection fraction, an assessment of the heart's pumping ability. Then there is stress testing. This monitors your blood pressure, your heart rate, and your heart's electrical activity to check for evidence of decreased blood flow to the heart, either during exercise or after an injection of a drug that mimics the effect of exercise. It may also involve getting an echocardiogram, a variation called stress echocardiography, or an injection of a small amount of a radioactive substance in a PET scan. When people without symptoms get testing just to be sure, the results are unhelpful and in some cases they can be harmful, says Dr. Kazi, who was on the writing committee for the new guidelines. For example, if test results aren't clear, that often generates additional testing. It can generate unnecessary procedures, including some that expose people to radiation for no reason. These tests add expense without any corresponding benefit, and the costs are increasingly being passed back to patients in the form of copayments or higher premiums. For people with chronic coronary disease, the real bang for the buck lies elsewhere, says Dr. Kazi. As the guidelines emphasize, people should focus on getting regular exercise, eating a healthy diet, and taking medication to control their blood pressure and cholesterol. All strategies that we know help people live longer, healthier lives, he says. Now here's another interesting article from the Harvard Heart Letter. Holiday gifts that keep the heart in mind. For gifts that keep on giving, consider presents that encourage healthy eating and exercise. Need some holiday gift ideas for loved ones and friends, or maybe even yourself? Here are some suggestions from two Harvard experts that may help inspire heart-friendly habits. Kitchen food and gadgets. Eating home-cooked meals made with fresh ingredients is a good way to make sure your diet benefits your heart and overall health. Gadgets that make food prep easier, quicker, and safer can help, says Kate Mitchell, a dietitian at the Lipid and Cardiovascular Disease Prevention Clinic at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. The number one tool I recommend is a food chopper, which you can use to dice onions and many other vegetables and fruits. They often come with adjustable blades for different cutting styles, such as a small dice or thin slices. A high-quality chef's knife is an essential tool for home cooks. For an extra thoughtful gift, pair it with a knife sharpener and a cut-resistant metal glove, says Mitchell. Made of flexible stainless steel mesh, this kind of glove protects your hand from nicks and cuts. Another small but handy gift is a set of silicone freezer food molds, which makes it easy to store single servings of soups and stews. Having fresh produce readily available is another great way to support healthy eating. You can provide a friend with a one-time box of fresh fruit or send a fruit of the month for up to a full year from various online sources. A sampler of spices and salt-free herb blends could be good for someone with high blood pressure who's trying to eat less salt. A basket filled with Mediterranean-inspired treats is yet another option. And they go on to say that a Mediterranean gift basket might contain olive oil, sun-dried tomatoes, marinated artichoke hearts, balsamic vinegar, olives, capers, stuffed grape leaves, dried fruits, and nuts like walnuts, almonds, and pistachios. Finally, there are gifts to encourage fitness. With New Year's just around the corner, gifts that help people keep their resolutions to get in shape may be especially appreciated. Because strength-based exercises can improve cardiovascular health, consider home workout equipment, like a set of dumbbells or various types of stretchy elastic bands. Sean Pedicini, a physical therapist with Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Network, recommends elastic straps you can attach to a door frame to perform Pilates-based exercises, which are especially good for strengthening your core muscles. Does a person you're shopping for have a favorite activity or sport? He or she might welcome related gadgets, gear, or clothing. Think cycling gloves, swim goggles, or a yoga mat. Pedicini also has suggestions for people who enjoy pickleball and golf. Pickleball requires direction-changing movements, and an agility ladder can help them practice these skills, he says. Exercising with a medicine ball, a grippable heavy ball, can help improve a golfer's driving distance. Pedicini recommends a 4 to 8 pound padded ball, which can be lifted as a weight or thrown forcefully to the ground or against a wall to strengthen the upper body. Now we're going to turn to another section of the Harvard Heart Letter. This is called Research We're Watching. The first short article is, Climbing Stairs is Linked to a Lower Risk of Heart Disease. People who climb more than 5 flights of stairs daily may have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. The study, which included nearly 460,000 adults, relied on data about their stair climbing habits and other lifestyle behaviors, which researchers collected at the start of the study and 5 years later. Researchers later tallied up the number of heart attacks, strokes, and related cardiovascular problems participants had during the following period. which lasted a median of 12 and a half years. Compared with people who said they didn't climb any stairs, those who reported climbing 5 flights of stairs daily, about 50 steps, were 20% less likely to experience a heart-related problem or stroke. According to the study authors, stair climbing is a minimal equipment, low-cost way to lower cardiovascular risk that's easy to add to a person's daily routine. The study was published online September 16, 2023, by the journal Atherosclerosis. The next short article is Treating High Blood Pressure May Lower Dementia Risk. Older adults who take medications to lower their blood pressure may reduce their risk of dementia, according to a study published September 5, 2023 in JAMA Network Open. The report pooled findings from 17 separate observational studies that included a total of more than 34,000 adults aged 60 to 110. Their average age was 72, and they were followed for 4 years on average. People with untreated high blood pressure were 42% more likely to develop dementia compared with healthy older adults. Those who were untreated had a 26% higher risk than people with treated high blood pressure. And when researchers compared people with treated high blood pressure to healthy older adults without high blood pressure, they found no meaningful difference in dementia risk between these two groups. The findings reinforce the connection between heart and brain health and suggest that treating high blood pressure in later life may benefit both organs. Finally, here's an article entitled Stress at Work Takes a Toll on the Heart. Men who reported specific types of job-related stress faced a higher risk of heart disease than those without such stress, according to a new study. Researchers followed more than 6,500 white-collar workers for 18 years and identified 2 job-related conditions linked to higher cardiovascular risks. One was job strain, defined as high demands, such as having a heavy workload and tight deadlines, coupled with low control, for example, having little say in decision-making. The other, called effort-reward imbalance, occurs when a person's effort is high, but their salary, recognition, or job security are low. Compared with people who didn't experience work stress, men who reported either of these stressors had a 49% higher risk of heart disease, but their risk doubled if they reported both types. Among women, the results were inconclusive, which the authors say might reflect the fact that women tend to develop heart disease later in life than men. The men were also more likely to have diabetes, high blood pressure, and other factors that raise heart disease risk. The study was published online September 19, 2023, by Circulation. And finally, I'm just going to briefly go over an article called What is Palliative Care for Heart Failure? From the Harvard Heart Letter. Thanks to medical advances in recent decades, people with heart disease now live much longer than in the past. As more people survive heart attacks and other cardiovascular problems, the number of people living with heart failure, when the heart struggles to pump enough blood to meet the body's needs, continues to rise. By 2030, nearly 1 in 12 people aged 65 to 70 will have heart failure, according to one estimate. In 2022, leading cardiology organizations published guidelines for managing heart failure. The guidelines an expanded range of medications that help reduce the need for hospitalization and may also prolong life. They also recommend palliative care for all people with heart failure, yet only a small percentage receive this type of care. To explain what palliative care entails and its role in heart failure, we talked to two specialists from the Palliative Care and Geriatric Medicine Division at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Contrary to what many people believe, palliative care is not the same as hospice care. Palliative care can begin as early as the diagnosis of any severe illness. It's provided by teams of physicians, nurses, and other specialists who work collaboratively with the patient's other doctors to provide additional clinical assessments and support. Often people with heart failure feel much better after a brief hospitalization and may recover to their prior level of functioning. But there is no cure for most cases of heart failure. Instead, there's usually a progressive decline with repeated hospitalization, which is rarely talked about. Being more transparent about the unpredictable trajectory of heart failure can help people understand what lies ahead and how to plan for the uncertainty. When symptoms suddenly worsen again, going to the emergency room and being admitted back to the hospital may seem like the easiest thing to do. It may be possible, though, to manage the situation at home. For some people, receiving hospital-level care at home may be an option. A palliative care approach helps people understand the benefits and risks of different tests and therapy, including receiving implanted cardiac devices. You can request palliative care, which is covered by Medicare and most health insurance, at any point along the trajectory of a serious illness. Well, looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.